We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 1096.PS7719, certificate number 37796. The St. Helena submarine plot.
Because the British think they are so tough. They think we French are sissies. They call us weeds and whoopsies and big girls' blouses.
With respect, my emperor, we are whoopsies. We invented the tapestry, the souffle, and the sweet liqueur. We will be slaughtered the minute we mince up the hill.
Do not despair. It is my firm belief that God hates the British. He will intervene miraculously and send us a glorious victory on this field of Waterloo.
Oh, bravo!
I was in France earlier this summer.
Humble brag.
Not even humble. Like, it's straight up a brag.
That's just a full-on brag.
I'm not like, I was digging wells and doing humanitarian aid in Paris this summer. You know, as I was telling the North African immigrants I work with on the outskirts of Paris, John.
Right. Making the world a better place for Syrian refugees.
Actually, I was just taking my kids to the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah. You were at the Louvre buying a souvenir hat.
I'm the worst American dad. We're going to run in. We're going to see the Mona Lisa and we're going to run out. I don't want any danger of any of you seeing other art.
You did the Clark Griswold tour.
The Clark Griswold thing we always say is when we're driving around a roundabout and something goes horribly wrong and we have to drive by the same place twice, my wife will always say, "Look, kids, Big Ben in Parliament," which is a classic line from National Lampoon's European Vacation when they can't get off a roundabout.
One of the great films, National Lampoon's European Vacation.
Right. Should we tell everybody we're starting a new about our new podcast that we do that's just about National Lampoon's European Vacation? If it gets big enough, we might do a Vegas Vacation spinoff.
I have to say that National Lampoon's Vacation, the original film, is a great film. And I think the subsequent films are less great.
Do you know my friend...
In descending order.
My friend Colin, whom you know...
I know Colin.
...was the kind of the... elementary school, middle school, like high school boyfriend pen pal of the daughter in the Vacation movies.
He was in the movie or he was
no,
literally
like in,
her?
In real life, they were like, I don't know, whoa, summer camp friends or something.
How cool.
That's pretty cool, right? But then they replaced her with Juliette Lewis in Christmas Vacation and
yeah,
I have no idea what happened.
That's what I mean. The standards started to fall off.
I don't think being her girlfriend would have transferred to the replacement family members, you know?
Right.
Like just when they
we're pen pals now, Juliette Lewis.
When they recast a role, you don't inherit the previous person's social circle. When I was in Paris, I was thinking about the French relationship to Napoleon.
As you are, can hardly help but do. Did you go to see the Napoleon's tomb?
I've been by, what's it called? Les Invalides or something. Every time I've been to Paris, I've been by it. I've never been in to see whatever the mausoleum or the monument is.
Yeah.
Have you been in there?
No, and I regret it. I feel like that would be very on brand for me to go stand at Napoleon's tomb, and I haven't done it yet.
I think you're on record on this show as saying you only want to enter Paris someday at the head of a column of tanks.
Yeah, that was always my goal, but then in the end, I just went to Paris like a normal person.
Would you lead the tanks to Napoleon's tomb and be like, Napoleon, we are here.
Lay a wreath.
Or just blow it up, I guess. Desecrate it. You know, because if you come up with the Anglophiles' view of Napoleon, absorbing it from British novels and young person's novels and movies, you know, he's a boogeyman. Mm-hmm. He was bony. Mm-hmm. They called him bony, which I guess is the worst slam you could come up with in the early 19th century, short for Bonaparte, I guess.
I don't know if I've told you this. I've definitely mentioned it on another podcast, but my mother is a person of Anglican stock.
A Masterpiece Theater viewer.
She's a tea drinker. She's a long time old ye olde English person.
Middlemarch reader.
Her people settled in Ohio in the era right around Ohio statehood. So very early on. Settled in Ohio during the reign of Napoleon.
During the Napoleonic Wars.
And she still refers to Napoleon when he comes up in conversation, which he does in our house. She refers to him as Bonaparte. And she does it with a sneer. She says, well, Bonaparte. And it's hilarious to me because it's something that's been transferred in her family, a contempt for Napoleon as this Gaullist, like, Republican.
It's on the cross-stitch samplers above the fireplace.
It really is. And it never fails to make me laugh because, you know, I was raised that way, to think of Napoleon just as a thug.
In this house, science is real. Black lives matter. Napoleon is a trumped up little thug,
yeah,
with his hand in his shirt.
Yeah, it's part of our family values.
Well, they would scare little children in England by saying, oh, if you're not good, Boney will come get you. You know, yeah. He really was a scary little guy. And a lot of our culture comes from the British. The French, of course, have a more conflicted idea of Napoleon because he took a broken country and restored it to glory, which is, I guess, the exact same thing you could think about Hitler.
Right.
And after World War II, it became less fashionable in France to say, hey, he took a broken France and he really stabilized it after the revolution. He introduced new laws and commerce. And instead, because Napoleon does have a resume you can pick apart. Your mom's not wrong here.
Well, you know, Napoleon is responsible not just for what would you describe?
A massive continent-wide war that killed 700,000 people?
I mean, you could, I think, make a very compelling argument that he's responsible for the unification of Germany. There wouldn't be a Germany for Hitler to have taken over if it weren't for Napoleon conquering the German tribes.
Is that in his favor or not? You can't hold Napoleon responsible for everything that happened to the Congress of Vienna because of him.
I think, actually, there's an entire historical school that would say that all modern problems derive from Napoleon.
The thing about Paris is there's no Place Napoleon, there's no Rue Napoleon. You think, he built the Arc de Triomphe, he built the whole city, it's a high watermark for France in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but he was also a kind of a low watermark too. Right. You know, it's funny talking about the British, how much the British rewrote the history of Napoleon for us, from our perspective. We think of Napoleon as being very short, but in fact, he was 5'7".
Normal height.
A normal height guy, and 5'7" was a normal height at the time. But he was characterized in a form of propaganda as this short, little, rotund, ineffectual man-child.
I think part of it may go back to a disagreement about feet and inches. They were not yet standardized
between
Britain and the continent.
That's right. The French yardstick had him at something like 1.5 meters, but converted to modern times, it's 1.7 meters. Some right. Little thing like that. But in fact, I mean, history regards him as small, but he was normal.
We remember him as a little pitch
taller than Tom Cruise,
taller than President James Monroe.
Yeah,
wait, or James Madison. Which one's the short one? Pretty much taller than every celebrity. All celebrities are tiny, right?
I think so. Sylvester Stallone, small.
James Madison, 5'4", shortest president.
There he is, James Madison. How tall is James Monroe? Since we're here.
How tall is he, or was he? James Monroe, 6 foot. He would have towered above even real Napoleon, not just fictional movie Time Bandits Napoleon.
Are you 6 foot tall?
I am not even 5'11". I'm just under 5'11".
Oh. You wear it well.
I think I don't seem tall. You're well over 6 foot, right?
Yeah.
6'2".
I do seem tall. I'm 6'3".
6'3".
Although, as I get older, I'm sure to lose all that height as the weight of the world crushes me down into a pile of bones.
People do get shorter, and you get shorter during the day as well. Measure yourself in the morning. The tissues expand at night when you're lying down. Mm. Once gravity starts working on you again and the ligaments start compressing and whatnot, you could lose an inch during the day. You could always sleep upside down, like Michael Keaton in the first Batman.
Measure yourself in the morning. That's a great lyric. I'm going to write that down.
yeah, but I meant height, not whatever depraved thing you're thinking of.
So what? So where do you stand on Napoleon? I mean,
I've never been to the tomb. I've never stood on Napoleon.
but as an American, as a Western person, did your family have a feeling one way or the other about Napoleon?
We never had a sampler about Napoleon. I mean, I understand your mom. If you calling him by his first name, it would be like calling Hitler Adolf. It's a little familiar if you think the guy is a villain. And he did, in addition to all the wars and, you know, being a very ambitious guy who was probably at his best in a military campaign. So that was
not a great politician,
right?
Better general,
not a peacetime conciliary. he's Churchill basically. And he reestablished slavery in France, which had been banned, but he thought it would be good for commerce to bring it back and apparently had no strong scruples either way.
Sure. History doesn't read that very well.
No, that's the kind of thing that people will really hold against you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're calling Andrew Jackson an Indian killer now, and I'm sure he killed people of all the races.
He really did. He was an equal opportunity murderer.
He just loved murdering all kinds of colors of people. But
this is another thing. You know, the British were the first Europeans to abolish the slave trade, and they really wear that as a feather in their cap.
Sure. And in fact, St. Helena, where we will return later in the story, was actually established as a British naval base to
interdict the slave trade.
Yeah, to find slavers at sea and shut them down. So today, there's kind of a political divide on Napoleon as well. Like if you go to the tomb, it'll be foreign tourists. It will not be school children learning about the glories of the Napoleonic era.
Right.
But, you know, there's right-wing politicians like Dominique Villepin, a French former right-wing prime minister, is a big Napoleon scholar who I think has published journal articles, and people do collect Napoleona. Is that a thing?
It is.
Napoleonia?
In fact,
Bona participles? I don't know what you would call it.
They're Bonapartisans.
That's right.
One of his iconic hats went on auction recently.
Oh, I saw this. Some Korean businessman. Is this the one?
Yeah. Bought it at great expense.
Millions of dollars, I think.
I was astonished that you could own one of, you know, like a verified Napoleon hat. And here it was, and it was in a glorious hat as a fan of hats.
Do you think he wears it? Do you think he's a short Korean man who wears this big hat and feels like a general?
Tucks his hand inside his waistcoat and marches around, goose steps around his gigantic
Samsung offices,
Gangnam office.
That's what I would do. So, you know, France doesn't know what to make of Napoleon today, but he's certainly a dashing romantic figure, you know, no matter who you are. And
absolutely. He's responsible for a great portion of the United States. I mean, it was Napoleon that sold us the Louisiana Territory.
And when Napoleon was defeated for the final time at Waterloo, you know, as you'll recall, he's exiled to Elba. Mm-hmm. Less than a year later, he's back making trouble again. He's like the barefoot bandit. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't stop him. You can only hope to restrain him. And at this point, when he's finally defeated and taken at Waterloo after the 100 days, the British are not going to make the same mistake again of saying, okay, you can be the king of Elba. They're going to put him someplace off the grid. And Napoleon thinks he's going to America, where he has fans and he thinks he'll do very well. It's like Spinal Tap going to Japan.
Oh, he would have been incredible in America. Can you imagine Napoleon in 1815 arriving in New York City? Wow, that's an alternate history fan novel I'd like to read.
What would he be doing in your family? You know, riding a steamboat up the Mississippi, hanging out with a young Mark Twain.
Yeah, can you imagine instead of de Tocqueville writing about America, we had Napoleon himself?
Undemocracy in America. He would have gone west and tried to found some weirdo Aaron Burr kind of empire, right?
For sure, he would have gone to New Orleans.
So that's where he thought he was going, and he was not happy to find that instead he was going to St. Helena, this one of the most isolated places on Earth, this tiny island in the South Atlantic.
It really is hard to find and hard to imagine being there. I was looking at real estate there not very long ago.
Wait, what?
I don't know.
You don't have to pretend.
No, sometimes I really...
You have a connection to the story.
Sometimes I really feel like, what if I just... gave it all up and went to...
So a lot of people have that fantasy. Let me stop you right there.
Right.
A lot of people have this, but I think you're the only one who has ever said St. Helena.
You know, it has a year-round population. Like, there are St. Helenans who live there all year.
You know, they call themselves saints. That's what the locals are called.
Saints.
That's a little self-important, I think.
You know, his Napoleon's like yellow mansion is still there, still. In fact, I think it needs some repairs.
Yeah, and Longwood House. It was built by the British East India Company as a farmhouse and later taken over when the plantations failed, taken over by the British Navy, I think, when it became a garrison. But St. Helena was off the beaten path then. And it's, you know, it still is today. They did not build an airport until 2017. That's the very distant past for
us. You're kidding.
No, until as recently as 2017, you had to take the weekly mail ship. Which I don't. Which way would it come from? I think you're about 2,000 miles from the African coast, from Angola or Namibia or something, but you're almost twice that from Brazil. So I assume they come from Africa.
Well, there might be like a route that goes from the Falklands to, I mean, yeah.
It's still a British colony. It's still the second oldest British colony after Bermuda.
Right. So I'm sure there's a mail boat that makes the rounds.
It's still a very hard place to fly into because of wind shear. Pilots hate going in because, you know, the reason why it's hard to get to and not all that popular today is the same reason they wanted to put Napoleon there. It's impregnable, vast cliffs on almost all sides, very hard to land there.
I said it was a yellow house. It's actually a green house.
Oh, it's green?
It's green.
Maybe Napoleon repainted.
I think it might have been yellow then.
Even in Napoleon's day, Longwood House was apparently a drafty old barn.
Right.
It was cold and uncomfortable. There were rats. It was kind of falling apart and shabby. Napoleon didn't know this at the time, but apparently the wallpaper had arsenic in it.
Oh!
And even though his death is usually ascribed to cancer or some kind of ulcerous stomach problem, there's some revisionist historians today that think the wallpaper did him in, just like Oscar Wilde.
Well, I thought that there was a further revision that he was poisoned.
I have also heard that theory as well.
That they were dipping arsenic and old lace in his tea.
Yeah, because Napoleon loved to have lace in his tea.
That was the style of the time.
I'm skeptical of all these things where, you know, some young buck decides that Zachary Taylor or Jefferson Davis or somebody was poisoned. It always seems a little too glamorous to be true.
It seems more reasonable to you that Napoleon was licking his wallpaper?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
You know, well, he was
the style of the time.
He was putting up his sampler that said, John's mom sucks. And he accidentally brushed the wallpaper. So Napoleon was not happy there.
No.
And the world was still full of Bonapartisans.
Right.
People who loved him. South America in particular was struggling to throw off the Spanish and Portuguese yokes. And Napoleon had been kind of the one world figure who had championed those revolutionary movements. So it's quite possible that one of the places he could have gone from St. Helena was Mexico or Venezuela or something. And he could have founded a new fourth empire or whatever there.
Well, yeah, that would have been good, except Simón Bolívar was already the Napoleon of South America.
You think each continent can only have one Napoleon?
I mean,
any given time, it's like the Godfather of Soul.
Yeah, I think if Napoleon had arrived in South America, there would have been a man there already with giant epaulets and a funny hat that was already saving the people.
Probably taller than him, you know.
That's interesting. Hadn't occurred to me how tall Simón Bolívar was.
A tan, a sexy golden complexion.
That's the thing. Less pasty.
Yeah, and nicer epaulets probably. The British were well aware that this was a risk, so they were not taking any chances this time. They were not going to have this guy come back again.
Right. It's funny to think that they did it the first time. I mean, you know, like it's a little bit of a
it's a goof. It's a hilarious blooper.
It's a little bit of a blooper. Like he shouldn't have been made the king of. Of a small island not that far off the coast of France.
Should we let this guy just hang out near Tuscany? Nah, what could go wrong?
I mean, it's like if Hitler had been saved from the bunker and been given...
like some white-collar prison?
Yeah. And
or he's playing tennis with like Bernie Madoff.
Okay, you're the king of Corfu, but don't come back.
We've decided to let you have this small part of Swabia or something.
But weird that there wasn't within the time any kind of, I mean, think of just prior to Napoleon's ascension, the first time they were guillotining everybody, including like Marie Antoinette. I mean, they guillotined the king of France. Why would they not have, why didn't they have the will or the interest to just execute him?
I guess Napoleon was widely, even though, you know, he's clearly this little god emperor dude.
Oh, there you go.
Not again. Little. I mean,
normal-sized he's normal sized god
spiritually
emperor.
Spiritually little. You know, he was seen as carrying forth the spirit of 1789. You know, he was gonna be the legacy of the revolution that would lead France to greatness again, but with the new civil codes and enlightened views,
liberté
of the revolution,
égalité.
Sure. He was like a cool new kind of emperor.
Well, but still fraternité, which we would X that off of the list nowadays.
We're not into fraternité.
Well, no, because it's patriarchal.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Why does it have to be fraternité?
It would be fraternité et sororité.
Right, right. Why can't it be liberté, égalité, and
gender neutrality? I thought you meant it was because we have no actual fraternity anymore. Like, we're all on our devices all the time.
Oh, well, that too.
Technology.
Wait a minute. Is the back of you just held up your cell phone. Is the back of it the flag of France?
Yeah, a lot of people don't notice because this is an audio-only medium, but I always have an appropriate phone case.
For every episode?
It's a Lego phone case that my kids gave me.
But it's the French flag.
While we were in France this summer, I put the French flag on it because you can put whatever.
That's swell.
But you can't really put real Legos because you can't put it into your pocket with all the little bumps. So you have to put these weird tile ones with no bumps.
Yeah.
I hope the future can picture. Lego just announced, by the way, they're switching to these new sustainable sugarcane-based bricks.
Oh, no.
So hopefully there will still be Lego in the future.
But that means that they'll just dissolve when they get wet, right?
Oh, sure.
Sugar cane bricks?
You can no longer, they'll be like gremlins. You know, you do not get your Legos wet.
Oh my God, sugar cane bricks. That's a great band name.
I don't
write that down too.
I don't think they're going to be, I think they're going to be waterproof in some way.
Sugar cane bricks.
Listen to sugar cane bricks, everybody. The British were well aware that they were not going to give Napoleon a third chance.
Right.
So when they put him on St. Helena, that was a garrison of 2,800 men.
British soldiers,
all guarding him. 500 cannons, a full squadron of the British Navy, Royal Navy, I guess, 11 ships. And the two nearest islands, Tristan da Cunha and maybe Ascension Island, they both had garrisons. So just in case he got off, there's a second line of defense out there in the South Atlantic.
Wow.
800 miles away.
What a boring posting for all those sailors and Marines.
They probably had USO shows.
Because all he's doing is just walking around on the porch of his drafty mansion, stewing, right? There's nothing to see.
Maybe it's a really good posting. Nothing but free time. Go see the cormorants or whatever the whatever the natural marvels of St. Helena are.
All the bananas you can eat.
It turned out it was very rational for them to be worried. There's a story that when the British garrison got to I think Ascension Island to set up base there, a little perimeter around Napoleon. They found written on the shore, and I'm imagining this, maybe in palm fronds or children's footprints on the beach or whatever. It says, "May the Emperor Napoleon live forever."
Whoa!
So some of his South American allies have apparently been there in advance and are sending a message. So everybody's terrified that Napoleon would escape. And apparently there were many, many plots to help Napoleon escape. Not from him. He's just there writing his memoirs and hating his house.
Licking his wallpaper.
Licking the wallpaper. He's got a shawl wrapped around him. Like, can somebody turn up the heat? He's got bare feet in a bucket of warm water, maybe.
I imagine on St. Helena or St. Helena.
They say Helena.
Helena.
Does that bother you?
St. Helena.
It's a British colony,
John. St. Helena. There's probably not a lot of firewood. My sense of it is that it is one of those windswept mid-Atlantic rocks it doesn't have, like, you can't just go out and cut a bunch of healthy logs to put on the fire. You probably have to import coal or something.
I think you're not wrong. Yeah, the East India Company tried to make a go of it agriculturally, and they found out that the soil erosion was just terrible. And yeah, you're right. Stuff does not grow. So Napoleon was not happy there, but he was not planning his escape. But people around him, the world, wanted Napoleon back. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like what happens when, I don't know, what's some example in our time? Nixon. Everybody wanted Nixon back. They were like, when is this guy going to have another comeback? We love him so much.
Just think about how many people want another Harrison Ford movie, and he just keeps denying us.
Sure. Anytime a star retires, Garbo, or whether it's Garbo or Gene Hackman or whoever, like, why are they living in seclusion?
This is part of the appeal for me of moving to St. Helena, is that maybe there would be a world outcry demanding my return.
And people would develop cockamamie schemes.
Well, they'd come stamp out in the beach in their footprints. The world awaits.
The Long Winter's fourth album. Mm-hmm. Where is it? Mm-hmm. So that plans were concocted to rescue him by yacht, by steamboat, even by balloon.
But you'd have to fight off all these British troops.
Right. It would not be an easy heist.
No.
No. But that didn't stop people from trying. One of the oddest stories, which for many years was thought to be a lie, but apparently may have some basis in truth, concerns a man named Tom Johnson, who is sometimes called Thomas Johnston in the historical record.
Tom Johnson. Come on. That's hilarious.
I don't know what's funny about Tom Johnson.
It just seems like a fake name.
It's a made up guy.
Tom Johnson.
I guess apparently Tom Johnson is the birth name. Thomas Johnston is some attempt to make himself sound cooler.
Right. Put a T in it.
Sure.
As they say.
It's a little less. It'd be like if your name is Smith, but you go by Smythe or something as an affectation.
Or Smith.
There's a record of him. He's a smuggler, a British privateer from Lymington, a part of England that apparently only develops privateers. He was the son of some kind of...
And Lyme's disease.
not Lyme's disease. Not Lymes either. Although the Royal Navy did have Lymes because of the scurvy.
Sure, of course. That's why they're called Limeys.
That's to this day. That's why we actually do not call British people Limeys to this day. I don't know why I said to this day.
No, we stopped doing that, I think, in the immediate aftermath of the war.
It does seem like something a weird old person might do. Oh, Limeys. You Limeys. It's Kevin Kline in A Fish Called Wanda, actually. You Limeys, so superior.
I'm sure my mom probably would think of them as Limeys.
No, but she would love them.
She's still fighting the War of 1812.
But she would be affectionate toward them.
Yeah.
The War of 1812 actually comes into our story here because in 1812, the U.S. and Great Britain are once again at war. And both sides
It's a minor skirmish compared to the war between Britain and France.
Sure. And both sides are investigating the possibilities of submarine warfare.
Yeah.
Submarine had not been invented yet, really. There were attempts during the American Revolution. They made a little submersible thing called the Turtle, which they hoped they could use to stick mines to the hulls of British ships in New York Harbor. But it never actually worked out well.
Didn't Leonardo da Vinci invent the submarine?
Well, people are always drawing. I mean, I could draw a circle under waves and be like, hey, I invented the submarine. But there's a lot of problems. Like, how does propulsion work?
Sure. How do you get air down there?
How do you get air down there? How does ballast work? It's a tricky problem, which had not been solved. One person who was very interested in this problem was Robert Fulton, mm-hmm. best known in America as the inventor of the first commercial steamboat, mm-hmm. Sometimes inaccurately called the Clermont, in the 1810s. But before that, his main thing was submarines. He went to France and he wanted to, this is actually, I think, pre-Napoleon. Maybe it's probably, that's the early days of Napoleon. It's the very early 19th century. He tries to convince the French government that he should build a submarine. And he's on his own. He's tinkering with a 25-foot submarine he calls the Nautilus.
Aww.
You know, to this day, it's sure. a proud submarine name.
Sure.
U.S. first nuclear submarine, right? Mm-hmm. Went under the North Pole, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's because, of course, the Nautilus is a chambered seashell that lives under the ocean but has air pockets in it. So if you're a natural history guy, the metaphor is obvious. That's why airplanes are named after birds.
So obvious that you didn't even need to explain it. But I'm sure that some futurelings are emerging only now from their shells, their chambered shells, and thinking, wow.
Representation.
That's right. Representation matters.
Finally, a submarine named for me.
I feel seen.
It was 25 feet long. He finally got Napoleon interested in this very primitive submarine, which again was used to just scatter mines and harbors and make trouble in general. It had a sail. It had a sail like a Chinese junk.
So he's pitching this to Napoleon as a component of warfare that might be used against the British.
Yes, this is before the exile. And Napoleon actually takes a look at this thing and finds out that it leaks.
Sure.
He's not interested.
Of course it leaks.
So Fulton decamps and goes to Britain and tells them, hey, I'm working on a submarine. And there, I think they are willing to give him, you know, the Navy's willing to give him a grant to, you know, try this for us instead of for the French.
This is why the British Navy was so successful, because they were ready to experiment with disruptive technology.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Disruption, Ken. That's the secret.
Disrupt boats. This is going to be like Uber, but for submarines.
Exactly.
And it has a Chinese junk sail when it's up above the water. So there's evidence that our friend, the smuggler Tom Johnson, met Robert Fulton in Dover, where apparently they talked about submarine technology. And in an 1835 book called Scenes and Stories of a Clergyman in Debt, the author, some anonymous clergyman, says he met Johnson in prison. Thomas Johnson escaped from prison at least three times in his life, a regular Napoleon. Mm-hmm. And he told his cellmate that he had been approached to bust Napoleon off of Santa Helena in a submarine and had developed an elaborate plan to do so.
Huh.
Here's the plan as Johnson conceived it. There were going to be two submarines, the Eagle and the Etna. The Eagle is 84 feet long. The Etna is small. It's about half that length. They're equipped with 20 torpedoes. If anything goes wrong, they can make trouble for any ship that tries to get in their way.
But this is the old-fashioned idea of a torpedo, which is more akin to a mine.
Yes. You can't shoot it at anything.
Right.
It's going to have a huge crew. There's going to be more than 30, between 30 and 35 men on these two submarines. And that's important because they need to row.
Uh-huh.
This is going to be an oar-powered submarine.
Now, not surely not row all the way from England to St. Helena.
That's the question. His plot glosses over the problem of how we get to the exact other side of the world. How are we going to get these two submarines to the South Atlantic? But once we're there, we're going to row ashore in the little one, the Etna, which is going to have cork fenders. It's going to have essentially, it's going to be a bumper car.
Mm-hmm.
So it can, you know, bump up against the cliffs and still have the men inside be protected. He has this elaborate plan where he's going to sneak ashore with a footman's uniform, a bosun's chair, and 2,500 feet of whale line.
Oh, this can't fail.
He's MacGyver, basically.
I mean, who would suspect a footman in a bosun's chair?
A bosun's chair, as I'm sure you know, but let me explain to the Nautili, it's just a plank, essentially. It's like a rock climber's harness that you would sit in and get hauled up into the rigging to work on the mast or the sails or whatever.
Yeah, it's an old-fashioned window washer's
That's almost bench. Exactly what it looks like. It's a window washer's bench, and it's got a counterweight on the other side. So he's going to sneak ashore from the Etna with this little mechanical chair and 2,500 feet of whale line, I guess very sturdy fishing line, the kind you'd put on a harpoon.
Right.
He's going to sneak over to Longwood House, tell Napoleon of this plan. And Napoleon has no idea, by the way. We're busting you out. I guess he's not French. He's a smuggler. He's a British right. smuggler. Oi, we're busting you out.
So, my ship can do the Kessel Run in 24 parsecs.
With my cork bumpers on it. So he dresses up Napoleon as a footman. Napoleon has quite a bit of autonomy. There's, you know, 2,800 men on the island.
Right.
But, he has accorded a certain amount of respect.
He can wander around at will.
Yeah, he can wander around a bit.
But so these guys have a tailored footman's uniform in the that will fit Napoleon.
Yes, a tiny little uniform for his short stature. They're going to dress him as a footman and I guess take a carriage somehow under the cloak of night to the cliffs.
Boy, this is an involved plot.
They're going to affix their whale line to the top of the cliff with some kind of metal fixture, grommet, I don't know, whatever
sure,
you
call
have.
Call it a pulley.
They're going to go to Home Depot and put the bosun's chair on one end of the rope and put a counterweight on the other end, a boulder of approximately Napoleon's small weight. And the chair they have has it's got like a running board, like an old jalopy. So Napoleon can sit and someone else can stand on the side.
I love that the most thought out part of this whole plot is the chair.
Maybe it's just that I was more interested in the chair than the submarine. Because there are plans for
Tell
the
submarine. Tell me more about the chair.
There are certainly plans for the submarine. But Napoleon sits in the chair. Somebody else hops on the back of the chair. It's kind of like like one of those strollers for two kids where the toddler can stand behind the newborn or whatever.
Sure. Sure.
You're going to get hop-ons, basically. And they're going to lower it down the cliff, put Napoleon in the submarine, and they'll be on their way.
And what, just leave the bosun's chair? That's the star of this whole story. I want to know what happens to the chair.
Yeah, do they have to cover their tracks so that the British wake up in the morning, they're like, there's no... How did he escape? There's not a single footprint.
Wait, we're missing two footmen. Wait, no. Yeah, it seems like a scene from Pirates of Penzance.
Right. Yeah, or a Pirates of the Caribbean movie or something.
Uh-huh, or a Pirates of Caribbean ride.
It's something from the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, yeah. The dog has the ring of keys.
So then he went to the Etna, and then did the Etna sail back out to the...
Yeah, the Etna would... From the Etna, they'd take His Excellency to the Eagle.
The Eagle.
And then they would sail Napoleon away to whatever powerful French military forces had engineered his escape to bring greatness back to the Republic.
Right, but okay, sure. But in fact, in France, he's also... persona non grata. He would need to go find an army elsewhere. He couldn't just, there's not like a French army in absentia that he could command, is there? I mean, one of the great things about his initial return was he landed in France and marched to Paris, collecting soldiers to his side as he went. That would be harder to do coming from St. Helena, picking up every like castaway along the way.
There were apparently... some elements of the French military
who were
still loyal to Napoleon, and they would have been delighted to have him back. There's a French general named Montholon who actually provides some backing for this story and says, yeah, a group of officers were willing to fund this, that we spent £9,000.
Oh, that's no small amount.
No, that's seven figures today on busting Napoleon out. And there is some evidence that Johnson actually had a submarine, that the submarine was not just vaporware. A writer for the Smithsonian in 2013, looking through the National Archives, was able to find a letter from Johnson telling the British Navy, hey, this is during the War of 1812 when the British are looking into submarine warfare. Hey, that submarine we were talking about, it's all ready to go. Where's my £100,000? And you can see the other side of the conversation where someone agrees to pay him. It's actually a Sir Cockburn, a British naval officer, a high-ranking officer who I think is responsible for the burning of the White House.
Oh,
in 1812.
Sure.
So he's got a good
resume. Hero.
Well, we wouldn't mind today. But at the time, Dolly Madison was not a fan.
I'm sure my mother also refers to him in a disparaging tone. Right. Cockburn.
His name's Cockburn. It lends itself to a disparaging tone.
You know, my mother's people were Anglophiles, but they were Americans first and foremost. We didn't side with the British in the War of 1812, I'll have you know.
That's where she drew the line?
Absolutely.
At the War of, you know, they're great. I love their murder mysteries, but when they light the White House on fire...
That's it. We're finished. We're through.
One step too far. And so there's evidence of Cockburn offering not the £100,000 that Johnson wanted, but £4,735 for delivery of the submarine.
Still, that's no small number of pounds.
So it's quite possible that this smuggler actually did have a submarine and wealthy French benefactors who wanted him to somehow get to the South Atlantic and bust out Napoleon in this crazy Ocean's 11 heist. It never actually happened. Napoleon, as we've already said, died of stomach ulcers or wallpaper licking or, what did you say, poisoned by his gardener?
Yeah, poisoned by his footman.
But the real footman, not just the guy in the uniform.
Right, the actual footman.
So the plot did not work, but it would have been a daring submarine escape.
It's very H.G. Wells, right? I mean, there's so much about technology, in particular, like mechanical technology, where you feel... all these wonderful inventions, it's conceivable that if a Connecticut Yankee returned to King Arthur's court, he could have used the technology at hand to build these marvelous devices. And it's always kind of a disappointment to have to accept that the march of technology kind of happened as it happened, and there were very few instances where some scientist made a dramatic leap in mechanical invention, and then that was lost to time.
It's very sad for the steampunk people.
Very sad for steampunks.
Who want to imagine all these elaborate zeppelins and rockets.
They think back to a time when everyone surely was wearing leather trench coats with brass fittings. And it turns out, no one was. No one was.
Nothing cool had all the rivets and goggles. That they secretly hoped for.
There were no dirigibles capable of hoisting like wood and paper submarines to St. Helena.
This is as close as it came. The steampunk people should, their patron saint should be Tom Johnson. You know, he wanted to be this Captain Nemo type guy. I think I was surprised Napoleon would have been, you know?
This is the steampunkiest movie pitch I've ever heard. And think about it now. Who would play Napoleon? And that concludes the St. Helena or Helena? The St. Helena submarine plot. Entry 1096.PS7719. Certificate number 37796 in the omnibus.
We did 100 takes of that, and that was the best one.
Listeners, in the unlikely event social media still exists in your era, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are all archived at Omnibus Project. Now, from your nautili, deep under the future ocean of boiling sulfur, you probably also have quit Facebook and Twitter. But
they were on it for a while in the ocean of sulfur.
Yeah.
And then they were like, wait a second. Why is Alex Jones still on this? I am done.
I am finally done. I quit.
At Jack, I am done on Twitter.
But Instagram still seems to soldier along until people start screen capping their Twitter posts and posting it on Instagram. I don't understand why people do that. God, stop polluting the one last place where people are slightly nice to each other.
Plus, you're quoting yourself. It's like being with a friend and being like, as I commented at dinner the other night. Come on, man.
Maybe you didn't see it on my Twitter feed.
I said something rather droll the other week.
You can go look at my Instagram account where I take pictures of food and dogs and kids, none of which are mine.
No.
Other people's food, other people's dogs, other people's kids. My Instagram account is at John Roderick. At Ken Jennings has an Instagram account that he refuses to populate with photographs. He just uses it as an excuse to lurk around.
I don't think it's even at Ken Jennings.
Spy on my dog and kid and food pictures.
I'm worried that you're not going to let the dogs and kids go when you're done with the pictures. Like, I'm there as a United Nations observer.
Yeah, well, they have to live for a little while in my sulfur ocean. But the two most fun things are our Facebook group, which is in no way an endorsement of Facebook, but we have a Facebook group called The Futurelings, and they are smart and fun and cool.
And they make trading cards about entries in the omnibus.
They have trading cards. They have a bingo game. They talk about the episodes. They have sidebar conversations about other interesting things.
Nothing romantic, though. We should.
No. It's an entirely chaste organization.
Platonic Facebook group.
And you can also email us directly. And by directly, I mean through 7 or 8 different intermediaries at omnibusproject@howstuffworks.com.
We have a snail mail address too, which would you like me to read it?
Go on. I'd like to. I do like to receive actual tangible things.
John wants you to send a steampunk suit with rivets and goggles.
An extra large all leather trench coat. And top hat, matching top hat.
It has a monocle with some kind of binocular vision. Mm-hmm. If you have one of those in John's size, he just said he's 6'3".
Wait, a monocle with a binocular vision? How would that even... I'm trying to figure out how you would have a binocular monocle.
Yeah, I don't know. What would you even call that if you had a monocle that covered... that had circles of glass over both your eyes? Hmm. I don't even know what that would be.
What a novel idea.
You could send all that to John to Omnibus Project at P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155.
02134. I can never not do that. I don't know why.
I don't think Zoom maintains that box anymore. Certainly not for distant future listeners. Speaking of you, distant future listeners, we speak to you from a point in your distant past. And of course, unlike you, we have no idea how long our civilization is going to survive. We're like Napoleon sitting here wondering when somebody's going to come bust us out.
Is the submarine going to bust us out of this hell?
Or is the wallpaper going to kill us off beforehand? We hope and pray that this catastrophe may never come. But if the worst comes soon, this very recording, like every recording in this series, may be our final word. To you, please close up the capsule and return it to where you found it. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.